Good evening. You are listening to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station. My name is Nicholas Miller, and I'm here as always in the flesh, an arm's distance from Steve Cato.
Hi. It's me, Steve Cato. How is everyone? I, for one, am just a little tired of flying back and forth between LA and Austin.
That's right. Yeah. Steve's always a bit tired coming in these days after the long commute from Austin, Texas.
No kidding.
Which I should go ahead and announce.
Yeah, go.
Next week.
You do it.
We will be doing a field trip.
All you.
Well, I'll be doing a field trip.
You.
To visit Steve in Austin.
Me.
Thank you, K-Chung donors, for that healthy bit of cash over the holidays.
Smooth dosh.
Allows us to do things like off-site mobile broadcasts, like the one we did at Garden Gallery.
Yes, for example. So
earlier in 2019.
Live from Wuba.
Well, Steve, I guess with all the air travel coming up, and the news feed just chock full of it. I was wondering, how are you feeling about the tragedy with Kobe and his family?
Well, I mean, it's sad for, you know, any child to die in a plane crash. It's a terrifying, or helicopter crash, a terrifying way to die. But, you know, I don't have any strong feelings about the Lakers, really. I don't wish a plane crash on anyone. Those rape allegations were horrifying. You know, I think it's a lot. There's a lot of, well, it's a complicated world we live in, I guess. And, you know, you can die in a car crash, too. So it's not like it's just helicopters, right? I'm sure helicopters are pretty safe. All things considered.
Yeah, I'm not really a basketball fan myself. I don't wish ill upon anyone.
Who could?
Nor helicopter crashes.
No.
Upon anyone.
No, terrifying.
But I didn't feel particularly affected.
How do you feel about Mr. Peanut?
Other than the general sadness. I find myself searching all day today and yesterday for who the other people in the crash were.
Why?
I know there was a high school baseball coach or something. I'm surprised that they've obscured the other people, which leads me to surmise that a lot of them were children, maybe?
I think that's it.
Goodness.
Yeah. They were on their way to a kids thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's terrible.
Yeah, I don't see myself taking a helicopter anytime soon.
No, me neither.
I know sometimes you take it in from LAX to the station.
Right.
Beat all the traffic. But
yeah, land on the roof.
Ooh, sends a chill down my spine.
It's definitely put a cooling on the private helicopter charter biz. So it goes.
Speaking of chills down the spine, we are back on track from our every other week diversion to our study of 1980s and 1990s erotic thrillers. And in our efforts to understand this genre of film, this revitalization of the tropes of Alfred Hitchcock, we've discovered there are other groups of what I would call geeks interested in this subject.
Here we go, folks.
Yep. They take a little bit of a different approach than we do. A bit more full-throated, I'd say. But nonetheless, we thought we should share these voices, this research, with the greater Talking Show community. So this evening, we have a rather peculiar group who are the perpetrators of the radio program Eric Roberts is the fucking man.
Eric Roberts is the fucking man. He's the greatest fucking actor since acting began. We should give him every medal, every trophy and award. He's the greatest fucking actor that you've ever seen or ever heard.
Eric Roberts, fucking man. Eric Roberts, the fucking man.
Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. If there's anything that you can do, Eric Roberts fucking can.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it's episode number 67 of Eric Roberts is the fucking man, the world's most psychological Eric Roberts-related podcast. I'm Doug Tilley, and joining me as usual in his sexy Freudian slip is my good friend Liam O'Donnell. How you doing, Liam?
You know what? I'm pretty good, Doug. How are you doing?
Liar, Liam, because just minutes ago you told me you weren't doing very well.
Why do you even ask?
Because I'm legitimately concerned for you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So how are you, Liam?
My baby's sick, and work sucks, so I've been better. I've been a lot better, but you know, I'm on here with you, and that's always the highlight of, I don't know, a fortnight.
It's a very sweet, sort of sweet thing to say, Liam. Liam, how has the year 2018 been treating you? At the time we're recording this, we're about 3 weeks in.
Sure.
A lot of people were happy to see 2017 in their rear views, or rear views, as people like to say. And we're now, we're, you know, we're in it. We're in it to win it, I like to say. Liam, how are you finding 2018?
Not so great so far. My baby's been sick twice, so that's tiring. I got sick once. You know, I work at a college, and people think, all the students think that, like, well, they're on break, you're on break, but actually you're just scrambling to get everything planned before they come back, and now they're back, and it's, like, super stressful. So
it's funny, because I work at a college, too, except when the students are gone, I'm gone, too.
Yeah, you're the, I'm on the programming side, so I'm actually planning things, and that's tough. It's a lot to get done in advance, especially because the department that I'm in, we're specifically planning things for Black Heritage Month. So, like, I'm trying to get everything solidified before February hits, and it's just a lot. It's a lot on my plate. And what I really want to be doing is catching up on movies. Like, I want to be, there's a lot of stuff from last year I didn't see. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It used to seem like January was a dead zone, but I don't know. There's stuff out right now I want to see. I don't know what's going on.
Liam, when things are tough, when things are difficult in your life,
do
you sometimes feel like the Lord is testing you?
Oh, God damn it. What? Come on. What are you doing right now? What is this line of questioning?
That I thought that was a very look, Liam. I'm just wondering. I know that you're a man of faith, so I just thought that that's a reasonable question to ask.
No,
he tested Job in the desert, didn't he?
Oh my God, I hate you so much.
So anyway, answer that question.
No.
All right. Shut up, Liam. Today's guests are the creators of The Bobby Roberts Project, a fictionalized mockumentary about the ignorant, fictitious son of actor Eric Roberts. It's Patrick Richter, Jahida Marie, and Tom Wilbeck. How you doing, guys?
We're super excited to be here, man.
We're excited to have you. You know, we met you at the Cinepocalypse event when we interviewed the actor Eric Roberts live in front of a crowd.
Yeah, it was great.
It was, well, thank you for saying it was great, but you were great, and you approached both Liam and myself. Actually, Liam was running out the door because he was so overwhelmed by everything, but we had a nice little chat immediately afterwards, and you told us about the Bobby Roberts Project, which is something that I had heard about previously, but I was very excited to hear that you were all involved. Could you, and maybe Patrick, or actually, you know what, probably Tom, since he is one of the directors of the project, maybe he would be the best to kind of give us kind of a quick summary of what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I wrote and directed it, directed alongside Brett Hudson, and basically had the idea several years ago. A friend of mine actually had the concept that it would be funny if somebody tried to do a movie on the life of George Washington and just did it in a ridiculous, over-the-top, Michael Bay-style directed way. So it was kind of born out of the idea, and I kind of have a strange sense of humor, and I like to poke fun at a lot of things. So the idea was, all right, it's going to be the son of somebody famous. And while going through the list of celebrities who could have like a spoiled, entitled, millennial-style son who just feels entitled and feels like he should be famous. Eric Roberts was literally the first name I could think of.
He's been in like 900 million movies. So right.
I mean, it's just the idea of like somebody's trying to make this train wreck of a movie, film it in a mockumentary style, but on top of that, add the layer of ridiculousness that, you know who my fucking dad is, bro, kind of thing. And in thinking of who the father would be, literally Eric Roberts was the only one I could really think of that really would, I think, would make it funny. You know, if you did somebody like Brad Pitt or, I don't know, Nick someone. Cage. Well.
Let's not even get into that one.
Okay? So it's just the idea of this ignorant kid trying to make a movie that's just a complete shit show, but has this arrogant kind of Kenny Powers-esque, you should know who the fuck I am because I'm the man. All because Eric Roberts is my father, kind of, that's the joke, or at least the overlying joke.
A year and a half ago, literally the first evening that we met, he was like, hey, I've got this project that I'm working on, it's a feature. And he showed me, like, we were having drinks at his house, he brought me upstairs, we watched some of the footage, and I'm like, this is a TV show, man. Like, this is we got to make this a show. And, you know, with different companies, we've been kind of working on it on and off, but once Pi sort of formed, I brought Tom to lunch and I'm like, this is our project. We will help you make this a series.
And then Pi Films is what Patrick and I, when we decided to just be like, just develop really interesting projects that we've been meeting, because we've been working on commercials for the last like 6 years. So to be able to work on something that we're passionate about is really interesting, and be able to put our names behind things that we believe in. Because, you know, we both have full-time jobs like everyone else that is doing fun shit. And so, like, if we are able to, like, dedicate our extra time to something, it has to be something exceptional. Because otherwise, like, I'd rather be fucking napping or drinking. Real talk, guys. Like, there's some shit we can be doing than helping someone, like, see their vision through. But when we watched Bobby Roberts, like, I was almost crying laughing, and I was really excited to be part of it.
So what was the process once you got Eric Roberts on board? Was it difficult to kind of explain the concept to him? Was there some concern either on your part or his part that because you're using, even if it is a fictionalized part of his life, that it might end up making him look bad? I spent some time with him. He's a pretty self-deprecating person.
He is. And that's really what drew me to him. Like, honestly, I knew of Eric Roberts when I was a kid. I used to just love karate movies. And, you know, so of course, Best of the Best I had seen when I was a child. And then later in life, one of my favorite comedies was Cable Guy with Jim Carrey. Yeah. And, you know, his little, there again, self-deprecating kind of joke that, you know, Eric Roberts played, you know, for those of you who haven't seen this, it's like a mock on the Menendez trial, which was going on around that time. Yeah, and it's like Eric Roberts in the role of a lifetime playing Stan and Sam Sweet. It's like playing both brothers. And it kind of pokes fun at the idea that he's been in tons of movies made for TV and otherwise. And I always remember, I'm like, wow, that's really endearing and cool that the guy just is cool with making that joke and he's okay with making fun of himself. So it was just, there's a quality about Eric that I always liked. And so, yeah, for sure. Again, like I didn't have like a number two I felt good about. I didn't want to do the project at all. If we didn't get Eric, I just wasn't going to do it. Cause I don't know, to me, it wouldn't have been funny with somebody else. I don't know. Or as funny. So we literally, on Valentine's Day, I think it was 2 years ago, I met up with him and Eliza and my co-director, Brett, and very hat in hand, like, listen, Eric, we think you're great. I understand my script spoofs the living shit out of you.
Yeah,
but to be fair, everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. You know, because if you water down the humor, it's just not – he plays a version of himself where it's just very over the top. All he cares about is busting out movies and like literally ignoring his son for the first 30 years of his life.
And he's so family oriented. That's not who Eric Roberts is at all. He's all about Eliza and his kids. It's crazy. Like how different.
Except
he is
for
from
Bobby.
His
Fuck Bobby.
Fuck Bobby. Fuck Bobby.
The gag in I should mention that you were sent over the rough cut of the first episode over to Liam and myself. And there's a gag about human centipede sequels, which just, I was rolling.
I'm glad you picked up on that. Yeah. Well, it's so, a shot where he's like approaching two people with their asses out. And he's like about to go in the middle.
Well, when I was looking up his IMDb, I noticed Human Centipede 3 was in there. I'm like, oh my God, that's so spoofable. I got to write something about that. And so I had to force myself to watch that movie, which I saw the first one, but just to make sure. Like,
he liked it. He thought it was very erotic.
If you guys can't tell, my sense of humor is very highbrow. So that's. But so I watched it. All right, let's just make sure if he was part of the centipede, because if not, I'm going to make that a joke. And the whole idea is, while Bobby's trying to film this Washington biopic, Eric's away filming Human Centipede 4 and 5 in succession. And every time you get a glimpse of Eric, it's Bobby calling him for advice on something.
So like fetish wear, yeah, like leather and like.
So essentially, the joke of the series and like Eric's role is, you know, playing a ridiculous version of himself. He's just trying to crank out flicks. That's all he cares about. And Bobby's kind of an afterthought. And Bobby's whole motivation is, you know, to please his father and carry on the Roberts family name, which in this version, Eric is solely responsible for. Nobody else.
Yeah, not Emma. Not at all. She doesn't exist. Okay, dude.
I do hope he comes to the LA premiere, though.
Yeah, seriously.
So the cast, we should mention, by the way, it doesn't just include Eric Roberts. You actually have a really interesting collection of comedians, some really fine improvisers as well. Fred Willard, of course, the amazing Fred Willard, makes a brief appearance. Jaleel White, Urkel himself, is in the cast. Chris Kattan. I noticed Drew Tarver from Bajillion Dollar Properties is in the cast.
Yep.
Oh my God! Yeah,
yeah, Drew. Is great.
I'm actually a huge fan of his. And that does kind of beg the question: how much of the dialogue in the finished project was improvised as opposed to scripted?
I'd say about 85% was written. The scene with Drew, Tony Hinchcliffe, and Peter Gilroy, where they kind of go around, it's like their casting scene where they're talking about who to get to be in the Washington movie. Most of that was scripted, but we definitely let them flow. Like, you know, I went into it wanting, you know, some funny stuff that wasn't written coming from those guys, especially, you know, Fred Willard. I think I spent like a good 10 minutes. Hey, man, say whatever you want. We're just going to we're going to point a camera at you and just go nuts. And all those guys were really, really good with improvising. And so, yeah, I would say what ended up in the cut you guys saw was probably maybe about 15%. But there's so much. We have over an hour's worth of footage that was shot over 6 days, I think we were. So yeah, there's plenty of material there, but unfortunately that's kind of the annoying thing about trying to edit something down to 22 minutes. It's you gotta cut a lot.
Well, and then Peter's reactions to everything, who, you know, Peter Gilroy, right?
Peter Gilroy, yeah.
Yeah, Peter Gilroy. When he just like has such a great reaction to everything. Like, you're looking through some of this footage and you're like, can we just show another reaction shot? Because he's actually paying attention and he knows what's going on. And I don't know. It was really interesting to see how much he's just paying attention in every scene, which I know improvisers are taught to do, but not everyone's really good at.
Yeah, all those guys had really good improv chops.
Well, and Peter Gilroy was such a perfect choice for this. I mean, like, he's done so many things. He actually just did The Disaster Artist, but he just did stream of commercials for like Sprint or Verizon. Like,
he's killing it right now.
So, I mean, he's an excellent fit for this, 100%.
Yeah. This does bring us to the kind of most important question. When are people going to be able to see the Bobby Roberts project?
That's a great question. So we literally, you guys were the first ones to actually see the rough. Well, I guess it's a little bit more than a rough, but we're just waiting for the sound mix and final color to be done. So we're hoping February 16th is the date. And then I think we're going to do a private screening here in Chicago. And then I guess, so to speak, officially launch, trying to get the series picked up after that.
We're going to do sort of like a mini tour with the project. We're going to do like a definitely Chicago screening, which if you follow the Facebook, you know, which we can sort of give all the blurbs about that.
Well, they took off the Dawn Facebook, but thank you, Patrick.
Right, the Facebook. Yeah, and then we're going to.
It's on the internet.
Internet, right. And then we'll do an LA screening with the cast, and then we're going to do a New York screening. So we're going to sort of travel this around and get as much traction as we possibly can. And then from there, it's the festivals. We're entering it into literally everything. And, you know, hopefully from there, it gets picked up.
Now, the three of you, Patrick, Jahida, and Tom, have joined us not just to talk about the Bobby Roberts project, but also to talk about a classic Eric Roberts film.
Yeah! Hey.
Today, we are going to be talking about 1992's Final Analysis with Richard Gere and Kim Basinger. Right now, we need to talk about the latest Eric Roberts news on The Roberts Report. W- When we return, we are going to talk about 1992's Final Analysis, starring Richard Gere, Kim Basinger, and Eric Roberts. Come Eric back Roberts. And join us right after this.
Yay! Woo! Woo!
Give them the old hocus pocus, bead and feather rum. How can they see with sequins in their eyes? What if your hinges all are rusting? What if, in fact, you're just disgusting? Razzle dazzle them, and they'll never catch wise.
A psychiatrist becomes romantically involved with the sister of one of his patients, but the influence of her controlling gangster husband threatens to destroy them both. It's the Hitchcockian-tinged final analysis from the year 1992, directed by Phil... I'm going to go with Phil Jonu, the director of Gridiron Gang, if you remember that movie, as well as The Punisher Dirty Laundry. For those who don't know what that is, that was a short film... as sort of a follow-up to the other Punisher franchise, the Tom Jane one, that people didn't really much care for, but people did like that short film, The Punisher, Dirty Laundry. It was also written by Wesley Strick, a very prolific screenwriter who wrote the Cape Fear remake for Martin Scorsese, as well as the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. Final Analysis from 1992, starring Richard Gere, Kim Basinger, and I mentioned the description there about a controlling gangster. That's Eric Roberts. A very interesting performance here, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. However, Phil Jonu, the director, he might be best known for a series of music videos that he directed in the late 80s, early 90s, including the U2 and BB King video for When Love Comes to Town. Actually, a number of famous U2 videos, as well as the video for Keep the Faith, by Bon Jovi. Yes, their big comeback, Keep the Faith. And since he is a music video director, I thought I would start by asking our guest today, what is your favorite music video? Let's start with you, Tom. Favorite music video?
Ooh, I'm going to take it a little dark and say Smack My Bitch Up.
Ooh, it's got a trick ending, you know.
I mean, but at the time, I feel like a lot of people didn't see it coming. And I'm not that even big of that style of music, electronic, whatever you want to call it, Prodigy at the time. But that was a clever video. And I like it was very Aronofsky style shot. I thought it was entertaining.
Reminded me a little of Enter the Void. And not just because it has that POV shot. Patrick, favorite music video?
Oh, hell. I don't even.
Mm-hmm. Come on, Patrick.
Why don't you 69 guy that you listen to?
Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of weird rap music lately.
He's white, guys, in case you were wondering. Keep going.
Pass. Go to Jahida. Let me think about that for just a second.
Was that Tanaka 69? Is that how you say it? I don't know how
yes,
you say it.
Yes, Tekashi 69.
Tekashi, that's what it is, with the face tattoo.
Exactly.
Who has the sexual assault charges right now.
Oh shit! I don't endorse that. But
so wait, what? This is an exclusive here on the Eric Roberts the Fucking Man podcast. Jahida, favorite music video?
Sure, it is actually the one I love by REM. I really love that music video. I
don't remember that one.
I know it's nothing special.
That's
it's
really
just
old.
You know what, guys? What can I say? I'm a little older than you'd think because I use lots of moisturizer. Anyway, I really like it because it's really beautiful, simple music video. That's all.
Now, Liam, you're a musician yourself. So, and also you enjoy music of all sorts, including hardcore punk music. You must have very strong opinions about music videos.
No, I don't.
Liam,
I just feel like I've watched so many, mm-hmm. and it's really hard to distinguish between ones that were actually accomplishing something, like actually had some sort of artistic merit, and the ones I've watched over and over again because they're embarrassing and weird. I feel like I have more of a connection to like Let Me Smell Your Dick than I do to like a song I actually enjoy, because I think that video is hilarious.
And it's a love song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really, you know.
In fact, it's kind of funny, Liam. You know that Enrique Iglesias song we listened to? If the lyrics, if you continue to read them, it actually does say, "Let me smell your dick."
That's more Spanish. That's more of something you say to someone you don't trust than it is an actual come on.
Liam, yeah. What's your favorite music video?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. What I'll say is one of the ones from my youth that I watched a lot, and mm-hmm. I'm sure I'm not the only person, was the first single off of The Chronic. I probably watched that video. I think I watched it every time it came on MTV, like over and over again. And I don't know if that makes it my favorite, but it's one that I can remember every moment of. Whereas there's songs that I love, even pops, like not just like obscure punk shit, but like big pop songs I love that if you ask me to describe the video, no fucking clue. Like I couldn't bring it to mind.
Let's talk about Final Analysis from the year 1992. We all watched the movie. A lot of people here are going to have some opinions, so I'm going to have to moderate a little bit. Patrick, since you fucked us all over on the music video thing, let's start with you.
Jesus Christ, great.
I want to hear, what did you think of Final Analysis?
I loved it. I actually really, really, I liked it. I thought it was a very complex story. Uma Thurman, great performance. I thought Eric Roberts was the sexiest I've perhaps maybe ever seen him.
Oh, my God. Can I interject? Are you fucking serious that you
I liked it. I liked it. I liked the
oh, my God. The complexity of it. He is not representative of the body of our
No, I thought it was good. It was a good film. I enjoyed it. I sat through it. And I thought
I sat through it. Ringing endorsement.
No, I think I'm out on a limb here, guys. I think I'm the only one.
No, Patrick, you are not out on a limb. This movie was well loved by a number of critics, including Roger Ebert and Vincent Canby, who's particularly marked out Eric Roberts' performance as being a positive. It also, however, was nominated for a number of Razzies, particularly for the performance of Kim Basinger. A lot of people weren't a fan of it. Moving over to you, Jahida, what did you think of Final Analysis?
I actually really liked Final Analysis because it reminded me all those psychological thrillers that came out in the early 90s, it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Too much plot, a hot bitch that can't act. Like, I don't know what else you could want. And then Uma Thurman in her 18 to 22 years.
So hot.
I have never found Uma Thurman more intriguing than she was pretending to be like this broken person. And Richard Gere, I mean, with his little puppy dog eyes, I was like, of course you're a rube. You look like a rube. Oh my God, this woman who's clearly just throwing her vagina in my face. What's going to happen here? Am I going to be used? No, I'm so surprised. I don't know. I really like the movie, though.
I like how the plot sort of hinges on Kim Basinger working with Uma Thurman to kind of pull one over on Richard Gere. However, once he discovers it, he is like three steps ahead of them for the rest of the entire movie. It's not even like he's never really in any danger for the rest of it because he's aware. Yes, please.
And Uma also kind of fucks her sister over. Like, she when she's expecting her to show up with the dumbbell, she doesn't. There's nothing in there.
Well, I find it.
Oh, there's something in there. It's scary pictures.
Therapist appointment. Ooh, scary monster.
I find it amusing how clearly the writer is just like, all right, no matter what, 45 minutes into this, we got to go to courtroom drama because that's just what's selling, baby. Right. That's what's selling.
I like how it's such a one-sided courtroom drama where there's never any doubt that she's going to get off. Like, they're right. Just tearing the
because of Tito
apart.
What was the guy's name in the beginning? He got fucking off because
Pepe.
When he comes
Pepe.
Back.
Pepe, that's right.
Oh my God, what was his name? Pepe. That was so terrible.
No, but
I have a quit. Sorry, yes.
Much so an homage to like sort of like a Hitchcock style.
Absolutely.
And I think for what it was it overly complex? Did the plot go on 20 minutes too long? Absolutely. But I thought it was well done, personally.
Yeah, a lot of the soft focus on Kim Basinger when she was talking like this because...
Yeah, does she have a real voice? I don't
know. Oh, my God.
Know.
She was killing me with that shit. I was like, Kim Basinger, you don't have to talk like this. It's okay. Don't worry. We'll take you seriously.
All right. So, Tom, I know you're steaming right now at the response to this movie.
He's dying. He's like giving us a death stare.
I'm glad you guys have picked up on that. Go ahead.
No, please. I want to hear your thoughts on Final Analysis.
Let me just ask the question. Can you watch Richard Gere with his one emotion that he has on his face and take him seriously or root for him in anything? Like, oh,
no,
my God.
No.
He's painful. That, I mean, honestly, Eric was by far the best actor in the movie. His, and he, nobody could play an asshole, the asshole husband who might be abusive to his wife, better than him. He for sure was the highlight of the movie, but oh my God, I just cannot watch Richard Gere and not want to punch him in the face.
Well, and Eric, well, like you don't know if he's the bad guy at some point. You're right. Like, he thinks his wife actually has an issue with her drinking, and he actually cares. And you're like, this is the bad guy, but he actually gives a shit.
But like, it's so sexy, like the cigarette, like.
Oh my God!
Back to you guys.
Sorry. I mean, look, I don't want to condemn Eric Roberts' character, but when they get in the car, he does say, "If you embarrass me again, I will fucking kill you."
You know what? There were probably like four or five lines that made me laugh out loud. Who's the guy that played the cop?
You mean Keith David?
Keith David, the man.
Oh, yeah. He was just a cliche of a cliche, but it was so funny because he's like, quit yanking my dick, kid. Or like one of those lines at one point that literally I burst out. Like that was, for humor's sake, made it watchable. Richard Gere made it very difficult to watch, though.
Now, you mentioned Richard Gere only has sort of one mode, one expression. Now, he does have two other expressions. One of them is when he's speaking passionately about freeing Tibet, and the other is when he's inserting...
I forgot.
He's a Buddhist, guys.
He's a Buddhist. And the other is when he's inserting gerbils into his anus for sexual pleasure.
Oh, my now, God. So Patrick doesn't know about that.
Can we talk about that? I need to be in line.
Millennials don't know. Let's throw out a disclaimer.
I am talking about it. I'm just about to explain it, and by which I mean... Liam, tell us what gerbil stuffing is.
Well, you know what, Doug? I'm very familiar with this practice.
Apparently, you guys have never been in love.
That's right. Apparently.
No, is this a real thing? I thought this is an urban legend. People don't actually do this.
Okay. Let me clear the air a little bit here. Yes, an urban legend, a very famous urban legend, is that Richard Gere was a big fan of gerbil stuffing, which involves putting a gerbil in your anus for sexual pleasure. Now, there's been no proof. It's just one of those weird rumors that
haunted. They found the dead gerbil. They found it.
Well, dead gerbils show up all the time. That's not proof.
There was a brilliant South Park that kind of spoofed that.
There was an episode of South Park which spoofed that, and but again, millennials not aware of. Yeah. I guess Richard
South
Gere
Park is this show that's a cartoon that's really funny.
Richard Gere has sort of outlived the rumor about the gerbil, so that's kind of interesting. But Liam, I haven't gotten your thoughts yet on Final Analysis. What did you think?
I think in the scope of the kind of movies that Eric Roberts is doing at this point in his career, it's actually pretty good. It's a real movie. It's a real ass movie. It's not like some thrown together thing, but everything is played at an 11, like every note, every emotional note, the sound cue, everything is just in this heightened, like, ba-da-da-da! And I just, it's too much. Like, I just need it to ramp back a little bit. Richard Gere doesn't know how to fucking spell acting, let alone do it. Like, he's the worst.
Thank you.
Richard Gere is one of the crimes. If the 90s were a human, Richard Gere would be one of the reasons I punched it in the face, because that's just unacceptable that he became a famous person who people wanted to see act.
Absolutely.
I just can't. I can't deal with him at all. You know, I get why people were hating on what's her name's from
Kim Basinger.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I don't find her attractive particularly.
Me either. Dude, I can't
at all. I just really don't. But I also think,
it's kind of an unfair thing to say, but I have to admit I agree with the both of you.
But right? But that's not the that's a
it's just great. It's not something, it doesn't do it for me.
But here's the thing though, that's fine. I get why other people do and why she's in that role. I actually think people are too hard on her performance because I actually think the writing is bad. Like all she's doing is either pretending to be Richard Gere's masturbatory fantasy or having some sort of alcohol-fueled freak out. It's not like there's ever a moment of true vulnerability where we see her be a human anyway. So to be like, oh, her performance is bad, it's like, well, I think she's actually doing okay with the shitty script that she's given.
Totally true. To the writing, like whoever wrote, like when they're at dinner and she starts chopping up whatever was on her plate
aggressively
and loses her mind. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, why do you want to slam half that bottle or glass of wine? And why does that make it, like, I get you learn that later, but that was actually one of the funnier scenes as far as I'm
concerned. It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous.
Out of nowhere. Like, oh, okay.
when she's leaving to use the bathroom, and then she starts screaming at Eric Roberts back on the table. Well,
that, and that's the other thing, because then to ground her back, you know, Richard Gere is the, you know, the stereotypical psychologist who just understands everyone. Right. Like, wow.
Thank I just think the funniest thing
that made it even more ridiculous
is where she's downing NyQuil. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Well, also, one of the funnier scenes, too, is when the big reveal of the dream, like, oh my god, that's what she said in the thing. And I was just like,
oh god, that was the Jesus funniest part where Richard Gere's in the library and comes to the conclusion of just figuring everything out. Like
violet
that,
violence.
Oh yeah. Oh god.
All right, everyone settle down just for one moment. I did have some issues. Kim Basinger, look, I think she can act sometimes, but I think your point was well made that this movie and its script kind of let her down. The thing is, her character here is supposed to be a smoldering femme fatale, and it's really something that's supposed to be very obvious right from the beginning to some extent. I mean, this is a neo-noir film. Of course, she's going to be the femme fatale. But the weird thing about it is that she's supposed to be, like, unbelievably sexy, right? To the point where Richard Gere having an affair with her, the friend of Richard Gere, who's also a psychiatrist, he's like, you really shouldn't be doing this. What kind of woman would make you do this? And then he sees her and he's going to be like, oh, that's the kind of woman.
Right,
but
right.
It's that just doesn't play. And I don't know if it's because of her performance. I don't know if it's because of my own reaction to her. Well, and I feel icky even saying that about her physically. But it's weird because it makes the whole movie not work, because she's supposed to be so overwhelmingly attractive and sensitive and appealing that it makes Richard Gere kind of lose his other faculties entirely.
Well, also, like, look at what's supposed to make them attracted to each other in the first place. Like, he's not funny or charismatic or, you know, like, the whole idea that, oh my god, I just instantly fell in love with this guy, it makes no sense, because he's such a plastic fucking character.
Well, he has a very nice den, I do have to say.
Yeah. He has a lot of books. He's clearly well-read.
That turns me on. I don't know.
He also has access to all of the abandoned lighthouses in San Francisco.
With, like, the fucked up, like, railing?
Yeah, which the railing just falls for no reason, which
that wasn't like
weird
that
little
before. Fuck you.
Liam, back over to you for a moment. Now, we've mentioned some of the weaker performances, the leads, apparently, and we're going to talk about Eric Roberts in just a moment, but we've also made reference to Keith David playing the cop that's sort of on the tail of it. I actually kind of like how that resolves, in the sense that he's incredibly suspicious of Richard Gere, and then they actually have to kind of work together at the end. And we have Uma Thurman. This is, I guess, post-Dangerous Liaisons, but she's still very young here. Were you impressed by any of the performances? How about that guy from CSI who shows up as the lawyer?
Yeah, I actually didn't have a problem with the other performances. I found them, for the most part, kind of charming in what they were doing, even if it was, like, Keith David's character is written kind of ridiculously, but he works with it. Like, same with Eric Roberts. Like, everything Eric Roberts says in this movie, he could have just come up with himself. Like, if you just said to him, like, okay, you're playing a scumbag, like, he could have just done that. Like, I don't think the script is doing him any favors per se, but it doesn't matter. Like, he really nails it. I think that's true of almost all of the tertiary character, you know, the sort of the supportive characters, except for Pepe, who should not be named Pepe. And that actor just the whole time I'm like, are you menacing? Are you actually misunderstood? Like, they never even clarify that at the beginning of the movie. Like, nice from guy. From the opening case, I'm thinking, this isn't real. Like, this is the setup that Richard Gere is full of shit from the jump, right? Like, this is not a real thing. And then he's just, the character's just weird. It's a weird character the whole time.
Isn't it strange, Liam, that Pepe doesn't die? Don't you think he should have died? Isn't that weird? So what happens, for those that haven't seen the movie, and that's probably a lot of people listening to this right now, but near the end, Pepe comes back. At the beginning, we see him getting off for a temporary insanity because of the testimony of Richard Gere's character. And at the end, he's hired Pepe to basically follow Kim Basinger, who has escaped from a mental hospital.
That escape was the most easy escape I've ever seen in my life.
Like, she just switches clothes with her sister, who looks nothing like her. It's Uma Thurman. So she leaves. Pepe follows her so he can get back this dumbbell, which has Richard Gere's fingerprints all over it. So it's ridiculous, right? But when he calls Richard Gere to come retrieve the dumbbell, Kim Basinger then shoots him a bunch of times, but he doesn't die. He lives long. He doesn't just live long enough. He lives and is able to tell Richard Gere that she's gone to the lighthouse or whatever for the end of the movie. Why didn't she kill Pepe, Liam?
For the story?
It seemed a little convenient, I have to say.
It didn't make any sense. Yeah.
Even more shocking, Pepe doesn't see her coming in the 15-second elevator ride. Just on the phone, landline. Well,
it's clearly an elevator to one room. And then when he hears the elevator go, he doesn't think, who else would be coming up here? He's just like, oh, it's the elevator. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just noise.
Tom Wilbeck, the director of the Bobby Roberts Project, you are a director, so you must have an appreciation for the direction of others. What did you think of the direction of Final Analysis? Now, I did think it was kind of obvious that this was directed by a music video director. It is very flashy. There are scenes in the rain. I do think that the visuals, does have a very soft focus sex scene where we do get to see stuff. What did you think, Tom?
We saw a boob. I saw a boob.
Richard Gere's ass.
Oh my God, Richard Gere's ass. Sorry.
Honestly, guys. The cinematography.
Gerbils go in there. Sorry.
For the better parts about it.
please actually continue from the start of that.
The cinematography actually wasn't bad. You know what's funny? You watch movies today and like the cuts are like a second maybe at most. And like you could like most of the movie was like 10-second shots before a cut. Sure. And a lot of establishing shots, like they love the tilt, like, oh, we're going to show the courtroom like from the top and then tilt absolutely down, mm-hmm, which, you know, it's a very old school, cool technique. But it's funny, though, when you contrast it versus what you see today, it's like they hold those shots so long. And that's actually one of the better parts of the movie. Obviously, the acting parts that we're talking about were not as good.
I found it a little flashy for the kind of noirish tone it was going for. I mean, it obviously is meant to make you think of movies like Double Indemnity and The Big Sleep and other kind of San Francisco-based noir. But then you get these kind of flashy moments, particularly in the climax, which, again, gets very Hitchcockian, very Vertigo-ish, as they go up this lighthouse and have this big climactic
moment. You know what's funny is how they end up there after the car crash makes, like, what are the chances?
like Richard Gere 0%. Is luring her into – by the way, so Keith David and Richard Gere – are being held hostage in a car by Kim Basinger. They drive off the road after hitting this, again, a foreshadowed bump or right, crevice.
They
fall into the water in a car crash.
Sorry.
Richard Gere escapes and lures Kim Basinger away. Did he just leave Keith David to die in the car? He didn't know if he was okay. Probably suffering from a concussion. I mean, if I was Keith David, I'd be a little upset about the whole thing. Liam, the visuals, impressed or no?
I don't love this. I don't love this style. This feels like of a time, and I don't love this time. And if I'm going to watch a movie that makes a lot of these movements, I don't want it to be this kind of film. I think you're right. It just, the tone was all over the place for the subject matter, and the visuals just didn't really work for me. And it all feels, because I've thought about this before, because I have a certain nostalgia for, 60s, 70s, even large parts of the 80s. So what is it about the 90s that I very rarely feel that click where I'm like, oh, I like this just because almost entirely because of the time it was made, and for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because that's when I was in high school or when I first started actually paying attention to movies was really that at this time, that like this style that sort of reeks of that era in my mind, or at least reminds me of a lot of things from that time, it just bothers me from the get. I'm like, no, this is not a thing I want. And not because it's bad. Again, this is higher quality than quite a few things we've sat through for this podcast. For some reason, it just doesn't work for me.
Well, you know what? When did Basic Instinct come out? Because I feel like the guys that made this movie were like, you know what? We need to do this. This is what's hot.
Basic Instinct came out the very same year, I believe, 1992.
Okay. Shit. So, like, to your point, it's a product of the times. Like, that style of cinematography, like, that was just... And everything, the thriller genre, all that was, kind of the thing.
It was definitely hot at that time. I should mention, by the way, that the cinematography for Final Analysis was done by Jordan Cronenweth. This actually was his last film. Also the cinematographer for Blade Runner, as well as the classic concert movie Stop Making Sense. But yeah, this unfortunately was his final cinematographical. Boy, that's not how you say that.
Final Analysis and movie.
But
I'm pumped.
But now we should move on to Eric Roberts, the actor, who has a very memorable appearance in 1992's Final Analysis as a potentially abusive, actually almost certainly.
God. Sorry, I just got really hot in here.
Oh my God, when he first shows up on screen, when you don't even know he's going to be there, his clavicle, that tan, he looks at you with those intense eyes.
Down,
oh my God, I just can't even
honestly,
right now.
Honestly, like the most attractive I've ever seen Eric Roberts
I fell in love with Eric Roberts. The first time you meet him in this movie, after he's been built up, because he's this asshole, he's this gangster. Of course he does public housing. He's this guy that just takes advantage of everyone. And
I love how they just touched it on that, about that, by the way. Oh, public housing, like he must be a piece of shit.
I know. Sorry, he does that, of course. And then he's just so like intense. When Eric wants to buy into something, he just does. I was oh my God, I'm just like.
It's very Mel Gibson in the blowjob scene, I feel. It's like, you give me a blowjob when I tell you to give me a blowjob.
But like, he's like smoking a cigarette so phallically, and he's just literally just like, do it.
The opening, the intro to that character is a great intro.
That intro is just amazing.
Like, literally, me and Jahides were like, what?
We were falling in love, like having to wipe the sweat off our brow.
We had to, like, literally, like, wipe the fucking steam off the fucking, like,
monitor. We were watching that. Because Eric, now that you've seen him so much, like.
Let's take a step back from all of us coming all over ourselves because of how hot Eric Roberts is.
Comment down there, Doug. We're not saying that. Okay.
Eric Roberts is, I would suggest that his character is slightly one-dimensional in this, in that he is an asshole, and everything he does, aside from a brief moment of concern about his own wife, which is then turned into a threat, is him being an asshole. I mean, there's no doubt at all that he's a piece of shit, and when he gets murdered, we are supposed to, at that moment of the audience, think, well, maybe he deserves it. And I think that's something that we're supposed to feel, and then we find out later that, yeah, he probably deserved it, but there is a lot of twists and turns that are then later revealed. I want each of us to give one word to describe Eric Roberts' performance in the movie Final Analysis. And I said that very slowly so everyone can get their brains working. Starting with you, Tom, Eric Roberts, one word.
Non-consensual? Is that a word? Is that
hyphenated, but I will accept it.
Because that's basically, you know,
that's
the gist of his relationship with Kim Basinger, right?
Absolutely, 100%. Jahida, what do you think?
Misunderstood.
Wow. Holy shit.
Is that the Missy Elliott
album? Thank you.
Because they think of him in one way, but the only way you really show him is he kind of cares about his wife. You know he's a piece of shit, and then he's dead.
Which leads to my word, trying. Trying.
We just love Eric so much. Eric's defenders
now. But here's the thing is, like, why it's so manipulative is because we are sort of brainwashed by her manipulation. So she's manipulating Richard
Gere.
But
you don't know that at the time.
But, yes, correct. Sure, okay. But, like, at the same time, like, the restaurant scene, when she freaks out, we see, like, that he really does in some ways.
I just like the little nuances of, like, how he chooses food. There's, like, an annoyingness that they really – and I don't know if you guys remember this at the very end. The guy in, like, one of the final scenes, they try to make him emulate Eric's shit from earlier. Do you guys pick up on that? Like, I liked the kind of throwback to, like, the little nuances that make him annoying or bad.
Now, speaking of trying, by the end of the 2 hours of this movie, I found the movie a little trying. Liam, over to you. A single word to describe Eric Roberts' performance in this movie.
Sweaty.
It's a very sweaty performance.
Agreed.
Not quite Star 80 sweaty, but very sweaty.
He is somewhat channeling a Star 80 performance, obviously with less layers. But, you know, considering that in the hands of someone less skilled, this could be a very stock villain performance. He actually has people mock us here as hosts of an Eric Roberts related podcast sometimes because of the amount of work Eric Roberts does in recent years. But you cannot fault or deny the amount of charisma he brought to this performance.
Right.
Actually, maybe you could fault that, Liam. What did you think of his performance overall here?
Great. I think he's one of the highlights of the film for me. I like, as we said, and we've said on here before, there's certain things we come to expect from a villain that he's playing, and this one is the insecurity is not as much out there, even though it doesn't take a lot of work to figure out that a guy who acts like this is probably pretty insecure, but he's not wearing it on his sleeve. But instead, there's more of like a menace to me coming across. But I kind of get what our friends who want to say that he's misunderstood are saying a little bit, only in that part of what he does is help the story distract us from Kim and the ways that she is fooling Richard. You know what I mean? Like, sure. If he makes that character smarmy enough and despicable enough that we don't notice that she is also a monster. And I feel like, yeah, if his performance was different from the get, you might be like, I don't trust that lady. Like, because why? Why does she show up the way she does? It's never really explained. Like, even the idea, like, I have to come to tell you that my dad raped my sister. No, that doesn't make any sense. Why are we on a date and you're telling me that? Like, everything about it is obviously manipulative, but the part of the reason the audience kind of goes along with it for a while is because of Eric Roberts' performance, is because of what he brings to the table for that character.
On the most recent episode of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man, we watched the 1986 Academy Awards, where Eric Roberts was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for the movie Runaway Train. And I mean, we had a good time watching that, but what that reminded me of, and what I was reminded of again watching Final Analysis, is that Eric Roberts was a movie star. And here, you know, he is a movie star. He, you can't take your eyes off of him. He dominates that role. He is everything that people kind of forget about him in this movie. And this is a kind of a forgotten movie in a lot of ways. I don't think a lot of people talk about Final Analysis so much. And it's even a movie that we've kind of held off on simply because I wasn't that interested in it. But it's kind of a hidden great Eric Roberts performance, I would say. And I was, again, very pleased to see him, even though, you know, he kind of bites it halfway through the movie. But compared to some of the Eric Roberts performances we've seen, it's still a lot more content than we tend to get. Tom, any final thoughts on Final Analysis?
I mean, yeah, when you look at the performance, Eric Roberts versus Richard Gere, how Richard Gere became a huge star and did everything, it blows my mind. Like, he's so bad in that movie. And Eric that was like the highlight, honestly. And this isn't a genre that I'm like into, even going back, if you want to call it like early 90s thriller, noir,
sure,
whatever you want to call it. He was the most enticing part of the movie. And then, I'm trying hard to keep up with rooting for Richard Gere through the rest of it. I don't know about you guys.
Jahida, do you agree? Disagree?
I agree, actually. My favorite thing about him is he's so sold in the character. Like, I love Richard Gere. He's great. But he's kind of like a wet blanket. Every time Eric is on the screen, he, like, takes the air out of it. Because at least he's trying. Even in that restaurant scene, he's genuinely trying to care.
Yeah.
And it is a decision that he's making as an actor that I find so interesting. This character is so one-dimensional. The fact that he gives any energy to it is astounding to me. And that's what I really liked about it. When he's dying, you're like, you're an asshole. You're fucking your... But are you an asshole? You're fucking your wife. You're married. Like, why is she trying to kill you right now? And that's what I found so interesting about this movie. He's bought into every second, even though he gets murdered so quickly.
Exactly. And there's so many dimensions to that. Like, I think he does such a striking performance that, you know, yes, he could be this one-dimensional asshole husband, but there could be so much more to it. Like, he could be telling the truth.
But it was the most believable part of that 100%. Whole fucking movie.
I know, exactly. Seriously.
Can we end on that? That's the most believable part of the fucking movie. Was Eric Roberts playing a brilliant asshole?
Yeah. Yep. I agree with that. Oh my god, this movie was pretty mediocre at best. We all talk, guys. Wah, wah.
That brings us to the climactic moment of this podcast, where I have to ask each of you is Eric Roberts the fucking man in 1992's final analysis? Starting in reverse order from what we were just talking about, Patrick, fucking man or no?
Hell fucking yeah.
Jahida, agree?
Second the shit out of that. Keep going. Tom?
Tom?
Best part of the movie.
And over to you, Liam. What do you think?
Of Ooh. Course.
Aww. Yeah. Woo! Yeah.
We have found consensus. Eric Roberts is the fucking man Ooh. In 1992's Final Analysis, a very middling thriller that is worthwhile to see simply because Eric Roberts is very good in it. Very interesting. Also has a great climactic moment where Kim Basinger falls to her death in a not very convincing optical effect. Hey, check it out. 1992's Final Analysis. I don't know where you can find it, but I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Take a look. It's worth your time, sort of. With that said, it's time for us to take our final break. When we return, we'll do a little plugging. We'll say where you can find more Eric Roberts is a fucking man, and we will say goodnight.
Walking cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb. I am the world's forgotten boy, the one who searches and destroys. Honey, gotta help me, please. Somebody gotta save my soul. Baby, detonate for me.
That was episode number 67 of Eric Roberts is the fucking man. I want to thank our very excitable guests on this show. Yes, Patrick, Jahida, and Tom, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedules and your attempts to finish the Bobby Roberts project so we can all see it. Thanks so much for watching Final Analysis and talking to us today on the podcast. Before we finish up, I want you all, one at a time, to tell us where you can be found on the internet. Let's start with you, Tom. Where can people find you and your work on the internet?
For now, let's go to Facebook. It's on the internet. At The Real Bobby Roberts is the Facebook / internet presence of the Bobby Roberts Project right now. And basically, if you go there today, there's going to be not much there. But we're going to release the pilot and start submitting to film festivals in about a month.
Correct.
And we'll start posting videos, little memes, goofy shit that gives you a sense of the style and tone of the series.
Yeah, and we're both going to say the same thing. If you go to that URL, starting next week, we're going to be basically releasing 8-second pieces that are sort of like glimpses into the Bobby Roberts Project, pilot episode. So that's where you can find us.
And then, I'm going to do the last one. And then Patrick and I have a venture, pyfilmsinc.com, that's also going to have the same information, but also has a couple of our other projects coming up. Obviously, Bobby Roberts is the one we want to talk about right now, but we have a couple other films from France. We have another pilot that we're doing that we really want people to check out.
And we'll, of course, link that in the show notes as well. And if you are a film programmer for a film festival, hey, and you're listening, why not pop over to the Bobby Roberts Facebook page and see what's up? Maybe you can have that in your own festival. What do you think, everybody?
Hell yeah!
Sure, why not? Liam, what's going on over at Cinepunks these days?
Ooh.
Not that much.
All right.
We actually just put out a new episode, and we should have probably next week a new episode of Hard Business, and I think Monday the new episode of Black Sun Dispatches goes up.
And you can find that over at cinepunks.com. And Liam, you are on Twitter, I believe.
Nobody wants to follow me on Twitter. Just follow Cinepunks. CinePunx.
Liam can be found on Twitter at Liam Rules, RULZ. And yes, go over to Cinepunks. Check out all of their latest work. I actually have a Pasolini retrospective series of articles, which are going to be starting on that site very soon, which gives people a reason to actually go there, Liam.
Finally a reason. Nothing else would have brought them, but your hot takes on Pasolini will be the thing that finally gets us to a million views.
I took you to the promised land with this podcast, Liam. I'm going to take your site to it as well. What do you think?
Yes. Oh, I cannot fucking wait.
You can, of course, find me on Twitter as well, at Doug underscore Tilly. That's T-I-L-L-E. Why? You can find Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man on Twitter as well, at E-R-I-T-F-M. You want to subscribe or listen to some older episodes of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man, go to ericrobertsistheman.com, or you can go on Facebook and look for Eric Roberts is the Man as well to catch up on the latest news. And don't forget to follow Eric Roberts on Twitter, at Eric Roberts, all one word. I recently appeared on the Theme Warriors podcast, where I talked about one of my favorite movies, Make Way for Tomorrow, and I almost started crying while talking about it because it's a movie that I find most sad on the planet. Check that out. Just do a search for Theme Warriors on the internet. You can find my other podcast, No Budget Nightmares, at nobudgetpodcast.com. But with all of that said, it's time for us to close up the Eric Roberts bag for another week. We shall return in just another couple of weeks with another Eric Roberts classic. Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Yay!
Later.
Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. If there's anything that you can do, Eric Roberts fucking can.
Wow.
So I got to ask Steve, the first thing I thought was, are we like that?
Yeah, right. I don't think so. I don't think we're like that.
okay. Good to know.
Yeah, I know. I know. Maybe we're a little more like Joe.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
Right. Aaron. I hope that our exploration of 1990s and 1980s erotic thrillers is a bit more studied. There's a tone to Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man that I can't quite put my finger on. But you know those people you have in your life who, and perhaps everyone's this way, where, you know, it's like if you're at a thrift store and you see a ceramic owl and you have a friend who's, you know, small reproductions of owls is their thing, and they're kind of there's unfettered, unbridled joy comes over them when you give them the
owl
reproduction of the owl.
When you give them the owl,
yeah, there's a childlike glee to it. And I felt that was that feeling, that peculiar love affair that your friend has with the thing they've decided and not reflected upon is their thing.
Yeah.
That seemed to be the extended tone of Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man.
Yeah.
Podcast, radio program. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, especially because I literally have no idea who Eric Roberts is.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess we are a bit more omnivorous in our tone and approach to material here on the airwaves at the talking show.
Yeah, right. Sam Ashley. But seriously, so you know who this guy is? Have you seen this movie? I know that you love Psychoanalysis.
Oh, have I seen Final Analysis?
Yeah, have you seen Final Analysis?
Steve.
Okay.
Of course I've seen it.
Okay, okay.
What did I think? What
yeah,
do I
like
think
it?
Of Final Analysis? I own the DVD.
Oh,
Final Analysis.
Whoa!
You know, in the radio, when our guest tonight said, you know, to their guests, to their audience, sorry, you know, try and find
Copy
a way it. To see Final Analysis.
Right.
Well, you can come to my house because I have the DVD.
Everyone's over at your house.
To watch it.
Your house.
Yeah, it's not a great film.
Good.
It's not a great film. I will agree that Eric Roberts is impeccable in the movie.
Well.
I actually just watched the movie last weekend with Ella Gold, and I asked her what she thought of Eric Roberts in the film, and she hated him. But
Why?
That's not a good answer, because he's effectively a rapist.
Okay.
In the movie.
So he's a bad guy.
So you have to hate him.
Right.
And if you find yourself hating him, then he's done a good job, right?
I mean, unless you hate the job he's doing.
He doesn't actually rape anyone. He plays a rapist.
Right. I got that.
That takes some talent, I would say.
Maybe. I mean, but
yeah. Well, you know, in the genre of erotic thrillers, it's surprising how few of them borrow anything from psychoanalysis.
Huh. Like, overtly.
This one, final analysis approach to Freud is pretty hilarious.
Okay.
Freud's writings are a kind of decoration.
Yeah.
In the film.
I can see that. Kind of like how contemporary art is in lots of movies.
I don't see any of his theories actually play a role.
Right.
You know, Uma Thurman goes to, world-renowned therapist Richard Gere in the movie for help, and she keeps quoting or saying this. She has this recurring dream.
Okay.
But, you know, Freudian dream analysis doesn't occur in the movie. Richard Gere just thinks there's something important in this dream.
That sounds a lot like analysis. Which,
yeah, okay. Turns out you see Richard Gere, who is like a published psychoanalyst.
Oh, important.
At a psychoanalysis conference, and somebody starts analyzing a dream in Freud's interpretation of dreams. And Richard Gere recognizes it as the dream that his patient had been telling him she had been pulling the wool over his eyes. So then he has to go to the library to get a copy of The Interpretation of Dreams.
Because he doesn't own one.
Because, you know, why would he own a copy?
They're not...
To confirm or deny
whether
or not his patient is quoting...
He doesn't remember it from school.
A dream from Freud. Rather than telling your own dream. It's bad. Yeah. The Hitchcock references are...
San Francisco?
Deplorable. You know, a blonde woman falls from a lighthouse tower.
Oh, no.
But I am a sucker for any movie shot in San Francisco. I think San Francisco is an incredibly photogenic city.
Right.
The hills and the tall buildings and that crisp air after the fog rolls out.
Mm.
Yeah. One thing that did come up for me during Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man radio program is the way that with these kind of films, people generally base the, you know, quote unquote believability of the film on whether or not they themselves find the lead actress, sorry to use the gendered version, the femme fatale, attractive.
Huh.
Like, do they have sexual desire for Kim Basinger? And the whole film hinges upon this.
Right.
Which is preposterous, right?
Because, like, it only really matters in the film whether Richard Gere and I guess Eric Roberts, whoever he is, if their characters are attracted.
I mean, if anything, these are the films that help construct an idea of what is... or what is not an attractive woman.
I see. Yeah, that's also true.
So the argument that an erotic thriller isn't good because you don't find yourself swooning over the lead is a bit weak.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean...
I'm sorry. Have you seen the film, Steve?
I absolutely have not, but I do know who Kim Basinger is. And, you know, I think it's also a situation where at a certain time and at a certain place, she was, an A-lister. So I don't think it's, you know, I think to say that one's tastes may have changed.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, it's getting a little late. So I'm going to head home. And you have a safe trip back, Steve. And I will see you this weekend.
Yeah. What fun.
Good morning, Chinatown.
Oh, boy.